Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
This is now the chance for you to stop listening and to join in the conversation. You've got the experts in the field here sitting, waiting for your questions. Do not be shy. There are people with microphones dotted around and about you. If you could put your hand up if you have a question. Also, stand up for us if you don't mind and just state your name and the organisation that you are representing today. So if anyone would like to, I know it's always difficult going first, but we've got a lady here in the grey jumper down at the front. If one of the microphones can run to this lady for me, please. He's running. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Caroline Flint. I'm an independent midwife and past president. I am wholly with the campaign for more midwives, of course. But what seems to me, as somebody who's worked outside the NHS for many years, what seems to me the problem is that it isn't just that there are too few midwives, is that there are far, far, far too many doctors involved in maternity care and feeling that they're leading it. And this is the problem, that it's not appropriate for surgeons to be leading maternity care.
Kathy, if I can let you answer that, please.
Caroline, thank you for that. My impression, and it is very much my own impression, is, as I go around, is that actually we're no longer in the situation where doctors believe they're leading midwives. I mean, if you start at my level, I work in total partnership with Tony Faulkner at the Royal College of Obs and Gynae. We talk to each other a lot, and we try to ensure we're singing from the same hymn sheet. And that is reflected in many, many maternity services around the country. And it's particularly reflected in the good maternity services. I was at a midwifery-led unit just the other day, or I was in Burnley, talking to midwives, and they've got three midwifery-led units and an obstetric unit. And those midwives and obstetricians and neonatologists and anaesthetists are all really working in partnership to ensure that the women who don't need to be in hospital are out of the hospital. So actually, Caroline, my impression is that in a very large part of the UK, we've now reversed that, and midwives are being treated with great respect by their medical colleagues. Okay, there are still some dinosaurs around, and we need to deal with them, but it's very positive. And as I showed on my slide, the number of alongside midwifery-led units are increasing, and I think there are also more women going through the number of freestanding midwifery-led units that are in place. I'm seeing numbers of women like between 500 and 800 women using those services. So I think in the next few years, we're going to see a swing from the 90% hospital, 10% out of hospital numbers. So I'm quite optimistic about it, Caroline. We do need to support our midwives who are working in independent practice, and we need to support midwives who are coming up with innovative models of care and engage with them and work with them. I do acknowledge that very much. So I think it's quite good news on this front.
Jane, I saw you nodding there. From a nursing perspective, is there anything you'd like to add to what Cathy said?
And I was nodding because I used to work in the North West, and so I know the Blackburn and Burnley setup, and I know the work that they did there as a team to create a very sort of women-centred service across that part of the world. And I went and had a look at what they were doing and spoke to staff there some time ago. So I think it's good. And I do think it's important. The issue for me about this is I understand, and I think you're right, that certainly in the past there's been that feeling, but it's about what are we trying to achieve? What are the outcomes? And then it's around, and who is the best healthcare professional to do that work? And in the vast majority of cases, it's midwives, and they should be, and that's what should happen. But it is a team effort, and I think it's important that people work together to do that best outcome.
And obviously, on the stage at the moment, no representatives from the doctors to put their point of view across. There is a lady at the back with her hand up. If we can get a microphone to you, please.
Thank you. My name is Kenda Crozier. I'm a senior midwifery lecturer at the University of East Anglia. I just want to pick up on that point. Cathy, I take what you're saying, and we are seeing the increasing numbers of midwifery-led units, which is marvellous. But I think in terms of career structure, what we're seeing is increasing numbers of consultant obstetricians and decreasing numbers of consultant midwives. What do you feel about that?
Well, I do agree with you that we have a problem with the number of consultant midwives. I mean, I think one of the things that's kind of hidden at the moment, when we look at what's happening with the midwifery profession, is that even if we are retaining in a lot of places the actual numbers of midwives on the ground delivering care, I think we are losing some of our more senior midwives, like consultant midwives and specialist midwives, and we are seeing heads of midwifery being brought into post at far too low levels. So I think we really have a lot of work to do to argue that these specialist, consultant and managerial posts in midwifery are absolutely critical. They're not added extra. They're not just about management, and we need them as much as we need frontline midwives. I mean, one midwife the other day told me, sorry, this isn't about a consultant midwife, but she told me that the infant feeding specialist in her unit had been cut. I mean, that has got to be bonkers. This was the same day as the UNICEF report came out about the value to the country of improving breastfeeding rates. You know, these specialist midwives and consultant midwives are critical to transforming the quality of our services. So, yes, Kenda, we've got to do more work making that case.
And the lady in the blue shirt just behind you, if you can... You're going to have to leapfrog over those chairs, I think. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Lee Statham. I'm an RCM steward and a midwife at Torbay Hospital. I just wanted to go back to the point that Caroline Flint made and Cathy agreed with, was I think things are moving forward. We recently at our hospital had a challenge to the way we work, and it was the consultant obstetricians that supported the midwives and fought for us to retain our model of care. But I think the focus has been a bit on numbers of midwives, but also I think the issues more around at the moment are a bit more political with the actual erosion of our terms and conditions of pay, which is obviously highlighted in the Southwest, and nothing has been mentioned about that today.
Yeah, nothing's been mentioned about that so far today. I hope it will perhaps come up, maybe even very soon. But certainly I'm glad you've mentioned the issue of terms and conditions and so on. I mean, the Royal College of Midwives is currently working extremely hard, both at a national level and at a more local level. We're fighting the Southwest cartel. We believe that it's completely wrong, that we should go to localised pay systems. We absolutely want to defend Agenda for Change. And certainly teams in the Royal College of Midwives have been negotiating right up just to the end of last week with the employers' side and with other unions to discuss how we can protect Agenda for Change, how we can make it fit for the future. And we will be coming out to consultation with members on the proposals that have been agreed between staff side and the employers really soon. But moving forward on Agenda for Change is conditional at the moment on us losing the Southwest pay cartel. We are fighting very intensely to maintain national pay and conditions.
Gentleman on the second row with the green jacket. And if you could just stand and say your name, thank you.
Paul Lewis, member of the RCM board and emeritus professor of midwifery at Bournemouth University. I welcome the chief's nurse approach to the model of 6 C's in public health. More so, I welcome the support of the Women's Institute to get behind more midwives in our NHS. But I think the big issue I want to pick up on is the C that spells out compassion. And compassion requires midwives to be able to deliver the quality of care that we were trained and educated to do so. And unfortunately, when you work in a service which is understaffed, overworked, heavy on bureaucracy, heavy on regulation, you don't get the time you need to give the quality of care that women should expect. There's really good evidence out there from neurobiologists, from positive psychologists, about what happens when we lose our compassion. When midwives are overworked and become tired, they make mistakes. They become the weak link in the chain, and they're ones that often get hung out to dry. Compassionate care requires us to have time to care not just for women, but for ourselves. And making it such a bedrock of your approach to public health is essential if we're going to move forward. However, the NHS, as good as it is, and the hard work that's done by midwives, nurses, and doctors in the health service, needs to transform. And I go back to Caroline's point. We need to completely transform our maternity services so actually for the vast majority of women who are low risk, they are not subjected to the high risk levels of care that they will likely to get if they go into NHS services. So we need more plurality of providers. We need more independent group practices out there in our communities. But that won't happen if EC legislation requires indemnity insurance for all independent midwives and there is no alternative. And believe me, this doesn't just mean independent midwives for today. It means all midwives for the future. So we need to be addressing the insurance issue and the out-of-hospital care by midwives with better ratios of mothers to midwives so as we have a health service fit for the 21st century. Thank you.
Paul, thank you for that question. If I can get a response from both Jane and David on that point of view. You talked about having a dialogue with your peers, and David mentioned about future changes in terms of getting more dialogue about public health issues and that being of long-term benefit to the woman, to the child, and also to the NHS in general. But if midwives don't feel as if they have time to communicate those messages as well as the basic level of care, that's very putting them in a very difficult position, isn't it?
Yeah, and I just pick up the point you were making around compassion and time, and I think it's certainly a message that I've heard, I've seen, I've witnessed, I've been part of. What I've been very, very clear about, and if I talk when I talk about the strategy for longer, I do go into a lot more detail. One of the things that I am really clear about is that, as well as compassion for the people that we serve, our patients, the women that you look after, we also need to have compassion for each other and we need to look after each other. So as part of the actions, I have been absolutely clear that the positive staff experience one actually reflects some of the stuff that you were talking about. And the fact we know that being a nurse and a midwife is very hard work, it's emotionally draining, it's very pressurised, and there's plenty of evidence that talks about compassion deteriorating as you the more and more frontline clinical work you do, the harder it is to become to remain compassionate. So part of the strategy is about what we can do to provide staff with time, support, supervision, and the ability to be able to take time out if you are particularly pressurised. The women that we serve absolutely deserve to be treated with compassion, but in order to do that, we also need to have staff that are able to do their jobs to the best of their ability, and that means that we need to find ways of creating time and space for them to be able to do that. There are various ways that we're looking at doing it. It's not going to be easy. We haven't got, lots of money. You're well aware of that, and Kathy referred to it earlier. But there are things we can do around leadership, around support, and around creating the time to care that will make it easier. And I think we need to really focus on that as we move forward.
David, if I can ask you to also answer that question.
Just a quick point to pick up the indemnity issue. The European legislation will be coming. It will affect us all. But we have to look at models of working around how that affects individuals. I think it's going to be really difficult, if not impossible, for the independent sole practitioner to find a way around that. But I think that some of the models that are emerging about groups of midwives practicing independent of the NHS are going to be really exciting and will be able to satisfy the legislation as well. So we've got a lot of work to work through the detail of that, and clearly the Royal College and the department will be in close collaboration over that, but it's not going to be easy.
And on the issue of supporting midwives to have the time to develop public health awareness and messages and questions.
Absolutely, and that's a lot about what the project is about, to recognise what people really need rather than imposing training or sessions or things on them, but to understand what is the endpoint we need to get to and how do we best get there and with the right people to do it, the right underpinning. And this might mean constructing a whole new career pathway, who knows, but we don't want to just bolt responsibilities onto current jobs that then become undeliverable. That would be a nonsense.
David, thank you. There's a lady been waiting very patiently on the second row down at the front.
Hi, Catherine Guttridge, consultant midwife based in Birmingham, and I'm the current chair of the consultant midwives group. I'm really glad that the issue around the diminishing numbers of consultant midwives has been raised, because, Cathy, you'll remember we surveyed our group last year and there's definitely a demise and a non-replacement of our number. What seems to happen is they're sidelined into acting as heads of midwifery, when I would argue, having done it myself as well, that the roles are entirely different. But what I really want to raise is, you, Cathy, very kindly opened our birth centre. I joined a failing trust 6 years ago, and I was overjoyed on the weekend when I heard about the government giving the opportunity for trusts to bid for large amounts of money to improve their services to families. If you remember, Cathy, when we set our birth centre up, the Serenity Birth Centre, we had a family model. And what we decided to do, controversially at the time, was have an opt-out model. That doesn't give women choices if they're low risk. It gives them direction. Now, you may say that that's not allowing for the spirit of what the NHS is about, maternity care. But we knew with our population in one of the most deprived quintiles of Birmingham, women were grateful for what they received. And you might think that's quite an arrogant statement, but in fact, they were very grateful for any care. And in some respects, that had led the trust to a failing, particularly a maternity issue failing. We had, at the time I joined it, a 43% induction of labour rate, a 37% cesarean section rate, and one woman per week in intensive care inadvertently. We now hold a 21% cesarean section rate, a 18% induction of labour rate, and we have had investment from the trust for a freestanding birth centre which opened last year. I work as a leader as part of our division, and what I really want to say is we need investment in leadership. That's what's lacking. And if you say from, if you like, the chief nurse's point of view, you're going to invest in leadership. I was very lucky when I became a consultant midwife to have that investment twice, once from the Royal College of Midwives, once from the Royal College of Nursing. I don't see that being given out now in quite the same way. We are desperate to have good leaders, and good leaders take us to places that we've never been before. So I would say my lesson to you is invest in leadership and then the profession will be safe.
Mm. I know we're running out of time, so I'll be terribly quick, but I just want to say that I think Catherine's absolutely right. It's all about leadership, and that's why it's so important we don't lose the senior roles that I've been talking about, and we support our heads of midwifery, and we acknowledge the critical role that they do. But the thing I do want to say, which relates to Catherine's own work in the Serenity Birth Centre, is I noticed that the thing that Catherine did, which I think is critical, is she asked for forgiveness rather than permission. And she did not allow her service to be overwhelmed by health and safety, infection control, risk management processes, which were not going to work in favour of high-quality women-centred care. She said, yes, safety is important. Yes, we must maintain low infection rates. But let's do this sensibly. Let's have plants, let's have nice facilities. And she led the way by saying what should happen. And I think we need a lot more Catherines in the service. And there's a lot of you here, but we need to multiply you.
Cathy Warwick, thank you. And we're going to have to curtail this particular discussion just about now, but thank you to Cathy Warwick, to Jane Cummings, to David Foster, and to Ruth Bond for speaking to us this morning and also for taking part in that panel.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.